Once again, I would express my pleasure in the opportunity that you have given me to be here today and this week and to share these lessons with you. As you noticed, of course, in the very first of the series, in the very first lesson, that the home means a great deal to me personally. And I think that as we can give credit where credit is due, that would be true with most Christians, that the home means a great deal because of the fact that it was given by God. And so as the lesson was, or the reading was given to us a little bit ago, and we talked about the beginning, we just want to amplify, if you will, the beginning, and going in connection with the verses that were read from Genesis chapter 2, that we would also consider it chapter 1 for a moment. And in this, as you see the reading, Genesis chapter 1, and beginning with verse 26, and one here, as God had said, let us make man in our image. This is an interesting passage and has caused a great deal of study, and rightfully so, as to what it meant to be in the image of God. And obviously we do not think of God as having, you know, a head and two arms and two legs, etc. Not that kind of image. But the fact that we are an image in the sense of a reflection, as one might look into a mirror and see an image or a reflection of self. So it is, if we are truly the children of God, we ought to see a similar reflection, if you will, in recognizing that God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. And so as we look at this idea, then, that we are in the image of God, God said, according to our likeness, let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the and over the cattle, over all the earth, over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fishes of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, see, I have given you every herb that yields seed which is on the face of the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, to you it shall be for food. Also, to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and so everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food, and it was so. Then God saw that everything he had made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day. It is interesting that in looking at the days of creation, that God saw that it was good. And after bringing then about man, it was very good. As we then develop this lesson and the succeeding lessons, we are going to come to appreciate, if we haven't already, the fact that the home was the finale of God's creation. Now, I've worded that a little different. A lot of times we hear it, and I've preached it, that man is that. That is, that man was the crowning point. When I say man, I'm using that in the Genesis 1 sense. The man, Adam and Eve, male and female, these two represented then the crowning of God's creation, the last in that series of things that were created. But in doing so, he created the home, and thus this expression that the home is the finality of God's grand creation. And so, as in the sixth day, the unique form of life, man. Now, we recognize that all these things that were made, that Adam had some appreciation for these things and knew evidently knew what they were, as he brought them to him. God brought the animals to him, and he named them. And as we see in the second chapter of Genesis and verse 19, out of the ground the Lord God formed every beast of the field and every bird of the air and brought him to Adam. And the, depending on what version we're reading, it may say the man, but mine here will say Adam, to see what he would call them. And whatever Adam called each living creature, that was its name. And so Adam, verse 20, gave names to all the cattle, to the birds of the air, and to every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found a helper comparable to him. There was not one, I think there was reading a while ago, was suitable, the word was used. There was not one suitable for him. Now we can have, and the, as we think of the animals of this world, and of course coming from Kentucky, there's a great horse country there, and people get very, very attached to them, and people will get very attached to domesticated animals and so on. And sometimes you'll hear someone loosely say, well, they're just like part of the family. And yet there was not a suitable companion for Adam. The suitable companion was yet to be. And so then here's where God caused the deep sleep. And then took from him the rib, and that he built into a built into a woman. And as we think of this, and this version says, made he into a woman, with a footnote saying built. God truly built the woman. He made her. He created her and and brought her as a this suitable companion for him. Thus, we see the here then the bringing about, the if you will, the first marriage. It is not the first wedding. Now, there's a big difference between weddings and marriages. And it's not a ceremony. God didn't give us a wedding ceremony, but he did give us marriage. He gave us then the fact that there can be two who would be, and if we may use the term wedded, but there is, nevertheless, this the marriage of these two. And thus, as he had said, it is not good that man should be alone. And so he then, in response to that, brought about the woman, and he gave her to the man. This, as we see, this historic event, and what God gave then was this suitable companion, and we want to emphasize that thought that he was the suitable companion. Among the animals, as we have read, there were none suitable, as there were there was not found a helper comparable to him. We saw in verse 20, he just simply he simply did not have what he needed in that collection of animals. And so God then did create something that was suitable, someone who was suitable. And as he did this, he gave then this fitting companion, the suitable companion, the comparable companion. Now, we want to ask a question or two with regard to this, and we start off with the idea of what is implied by companion, and how we're using that word. You know, we can be taking an airplane flight somewhere, and we might say, well, our fellow traveling companions. This is a word that is far deeper than that. This has to do with the companion in the sense of what Adam needed at the time, and as we've seen the continuance of mankind, what it is there. But notice, by the way, some different thoughts. The New King James Version, from which I'm reading, does say a helper comparable to him. The NIV talks about it being a suitable helper. And then the King James Version, and help meet for him. That is, again, the word suitable is usually translated in that place. So the foundation of God's design for the husband and wife relationship are herein stated. And as we look at this and as we go through this, I hope that we can have the appreciation for all that God has given us. For instance, as we saw and looked at it early on, the matter the matter of procreation. In first chapter, in verse 27, beginning, we saw that God had made them male and female. And then in 28, then he says, be fruitful and multiply. And so they, like all living things, were given the ability to reproduce themselves. Now, there are a number of ways of looking at this, and of course the first and obvious way, and we think in the sense of procreation, is simply the physical sense. That we then are, all of us, are offspring of parentage. And as we are the offspring of that, this is something that God set in order a bit more than 6,000 years ago. But as we have this, that gift that God has given us, there's another sense in which we can bring the offspring of our parentage, and that is when we have received the proper lessons. Now, I want to hasten to say that I've often used the expression, God has no grandchildren. That is, as we obey the gospel, we become his children. And yet, we cannot deny the influence that it's going to have, the parents would have upon the children, and we'll explore that a little more later. But as we look at this idea that here that God has given us this ability to then prolong our lives through the next generation and the next and so on. And not too long ago, I, for the first time, got really interested in genealogy and of our family. I just, for some reason, had not had much call for it, or just didn't have an interest in it. So I went back to the old territory where my father was born and raised, in South Central Indiana, and went out to the cemetery, which was within 150 yards of where he was born. But as we looked at that, looked at the stones there, I saw not only the stones that were marking the grave of my father, but my grandfather, my great-great-grandfather. And it went back quite a ways, all the way into 1790, I think it was, the first one the oldest one that wasn't there in the grave. Each one then passed himself along to the next generation. And God has given us the ability to do that. We know also then, with regard to this and closely related, is what we might refer to as connubiality. As we think of, as it were, the connubial bliss, we talk about that when someone is newly married. Or as we think of the way Paul worded it, and looking at 1 Corinthians in chapter 7, that we see of what he was giving responsibilities. Now, remember, this letter was written to the city of Corinth. City of Corinth was a very wicked city. In fact, in a lot of the famous plays of the time and the Greek plays, they wanted to portray a man who was exceedingly wicked, vile, immoral. They would say, that Corinthian. And that was the way they would describe it. If they spoke of an individual as that Corinthian, that was not a compliment. Indeed, it was meant to show that he was quite a vile person. And so in that, we see that there were Christians who had been tainted by this in times past, but now, as Paul would say elsewhere, that they were washed and sanctified and justified. They were Christians. But now then he says, and evidently they had written him a letter about this, and he says, concerning the things of which you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. And here then, as we would point out, that God is not, that God has given us then the ability for us to extend ourselves, as it were, into the next generation, and to give us great happiness here on the earth. And this is how he designed it and how it should come about. The third part of this is the fact that there is the spiritual welfare. And while we're here in First Corinthians 7, we also notice then at verse 16, there is a great challenge that is here with regard to and in regard to one's spouse. And then Paul asked the question, how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband? How do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? And so there are then the spiritual considerations in this. Once more, I'm going to expand on this more at a later time. But it is something that we need to think about, that there is then a whole lot to, in thinking of our getting married and what we plan to accomplish in that marriage. And so we see that these three points are brought out, I believe, and they're inherent in this. If we look in the God's creation and in the first two chapters of Genesis, these things are there. In the New Testament, as we see in Ephesians 5, that God was talking about something that was very important and wanted those of Ephesus to know. Ephesus was also a very worldly city. But here, as he is describing Christ and the church, and he gives then a relationship to explain the relationship of Christ and the church. And it, so, as he says in this is Ephesians 5 and verse 32, this is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. But what has he used as an illustration? And what we see as the illustration is the husband-wife relationship. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. Christ gave his life for the church. That, and here's the reason, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that he should be holy and without blemish. So, or in like manner, if you will, husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord the church. And then he gives the reason behind all this. For, here's the reason. For this, it goes on to talk about the fact that we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. We are part of him. As Christians, we are in the body of Christ. We recognize that he's been given to be head over all things to the church, which is his body. And so we speak of that, and in Colossians 1:18, the body being the church. Ephesians 2, then the church being the body. Here we are part of that great spiritual family. Paul says, he says, all this is important, and this is the reason, we are members of his body. And thus, we can see the importance then of the spiritual welfare when he's talking about the relationship of Christ in the church. Let's put it in this perspective. Suppose Christ did not care any more for the church than many husbands care for their wives. Where would we be? It'd be a sad situation, wouldn't it? But he uses that, the husband-wife relationship to illustrate the point. As Christ did, then of course loved the church and gave himself for it. And we might think of the three-legged stool, as it were. The thought of that. It reminds me of my maternal grandfather's farm. And I had an uncle that was only 6 years older than I. He was all the time playing a joke on me. And he handed me a stool one time in the barn. And he handed me a stool that looked similar to this one. Matter of fact, it looked a great deal like this one, in that all you see here is two legs. As he handed it to me, that's what I saw. I did not know that the third leg was missing. Okay, that's enough. The thing is, it doesn't work, does it? You recognize the fact that you take away one of these legs and the rest of it won't work as God intended. For instance, if we're looking at the procreation, connubiality, spiritual welfare, you take away the spiritual welfare and what have you left as far as what God gave us? You see, we're sorely missing, badly missing, and we need to have that. That's a part of our lives. In the beginning, the home had God's stamp of approval, of course, and we must recognize it as a, and I have here, divine institution, really, if we can think of it as a divine human institution, as we think of ourselves as human beings, and yet it is divine in the sense that that God made it. When I was young, I used to hear the expression, a marriage made in heaven. Well, if we're living by God's laws, we all have that, don't we? A marriage made in heaven, because He designed it. He made it so that we would understand what we have there. Is marriage pleasurable? Of course it is. Or it is, it should be. And as we think of it as being a pleasurable experience to be married. But with that comes responsibilities. And as we're talking about the idea of this being a divine institution, then we need to listen to what God had to say, what God had to say about it. As He made the woman, brought her to the man. Keep in mind that same place will show us that it was monogamous in form, that it was simply one man, one woman. You know, there's a lot of debate today in various states across the nation about whether or not we can stay with the definition of marriage, of one man, one woman. And there are those who are really squawking about that loudly. But this is what God gave us. This is what God made. As we said earlier, that God gave Adam then one companion. Think about it for a moment. 6 days of creation, and that was, as we would look at it, a monumental task. As we think of all that is there. If you've ever had a chance to look through a high-powered telescope sometime in the night in a dark place and look up at the wonders of the sky and think that you're seeing so little of what is out there. It goes on and on and on, and that God made this. And then when He came then to the last day of creation, you suppose He was tired and He just couldn't make any more than one woman? One was all He had the strength left to do. Surely we would not be then so blasphemous as to suggest that God is weakened by this time. He could have made for Adam 2 or 20 or any number. But He gave him what he needed. Not necessarily what some men might think he would have wanted, but He gave him what he needed, what was suitable, what was fitting, and He gave Adam Eve. He gave man woman. And then as we think of the home as it is a divine institution, it's monogamous in form, but it is also then patriarchal in government. This is one of the things that is very, very difficult to describe in time, in our time. I have an aunt that has three daughters. And a son as well, but the three daughters, all of them, as they neared marrying age, made declarations that they were simply, if they did get married, they weren't going to be bossed around by any man. And one of them, and I think it's two of them, refused to take the husband's name when they did get married. They just said, well, we're signing, more or less signing a contract for things that have to do with owning a house and cars and various things. But they did not look at it as this as being something that God has given us. Well, all three of those daughters are divorced today. They had no respect for their husbands. But I want to tell you what the first problem was. They had no respect for God. And by not having respect for God, their homes broke. And that's a sad thing. It begins with God. In the beginning, man, no! In the beginning, God. And that, folks, let that sink in deeply. In the beginning, God. And in the beginning, God created. And included in that creation is the home. And it has the patriarchal government. We may not like it. Some may not like it. Other that we find today a lot of ridicule and so on that goes on about that. But it's simply because they haven't understood. I mentioned earlier about spending 2 years in Nigeria. That was a grand experience for me, an eye-opener in a lot of ways. But one of the ways was the fact that women who became Christians, and particularly women whose husbands became Christians, the women were honored after they became Christians. Nigeria is half Muslim, roughly half Muslim. The Muslims are allowed 4 wives. Under Nigerian law, a man can have as many wives as he wanted, as long as he did not let one of them starve. Now that seems like a strange law, but I mean, I knew a man who did let one of his wives starve. The neighbors stoned him to death. And not one finger was laid on any man by the law because they said, well, he deserved that. He let her die. But here's the thing. The law allowed as many as the man could support. Muslims allowed 4. Christians then were taught only 1. One time we were about to baptize a man in the middle of the night. And suddenly he said, I have a question. He said, I am married, and I'm about to take a second wife. We backed away from the water for just a little bit, and we said, we need to talk just a bit. We talked about that for a long time, and he asked many questions, and he was very earnest about it. And finally, then, I asked him the question. I said, what will happen to your bride price? And I'd learned enough about their customs then to knowing that he had paid that. And his response was, so much for the bride price. In other words, he wasn't going to get it back. He had paid a man to marry the man's daughter, and he would not, because he backed out of it, he would not get his money back. He was convicted that what he was doing was the right thing. He loved God. He said, I know my Lord died for me. I will not blaspheme his name by going against his will. What a wonderful lesson for all of us. To realize that we would not put our own selfishness ahead of the Word of God. And this is what has happened so much in society, that this has been done, that people have just simply put themselves ahead of the Word, ahead of the Word of God. First Timothy 2, and there are just a number of passages that we could read. And it just, this one in verse 13 just simply says Adam was created first, then man, then woman. And then as we think of other passages, we recognize that this was God's order of things. It doesn't make any difference as far as a lot of people are concerned. But if we are going to believe the scriptures, if we're going to accept what it has to say to us, then it will make a difference for us. I was wanting to 1 Corinthians 11. And as he says in verse 1, imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. Now, I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the traditions just as I have delivered them to you. But I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Now, we need to, as we see that, let me ask you something. as we look at this, and the head of Christ is God, did that make Christ a second-rate citizen? Did that cheapen his place? Did that make him something less? And I see a head shaking. That's true. He wouldn't. He would not be any less, just simply because of the fact that he accepted the Jehovah as the head. And likewise, then, so it should be that we should not consider woman second class, as some would say, if she submits to a man. But the woman who will not so submit, in the scriptural terms, will not submit to God. And if you believe in God, then you will understand these terms. And perhaps we can expand on these things more later. But I want to really bring it home that the home is patriarchal in government, and that it is religious in spirit. And as we've read somewhat before, but in Deuteronomy 6, of course, there was a responsibility of teaching family, and teaching children. Proverbs 22 and 6, of course, they bring up, as we bring up the child right, when he's old, he will not depart from it. As we see these and other passages along this line, Timothy and how he was taught in the home, etc. But as we look then further, we would see then that the home is indissoluble in nature. And that is that it's simply not to break up. Matthew 19, you know, what God has put together, let no man separate or put asunder. Romans 7, a man are to be together until death. And as we can see that in 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 39. All of this then is a part of God's plan. Look at it again. Divine institution, monogamous in form, patriarchal in government, religious in spirit, and indissoluble in nature. What a wonderful relationship that God has given us. Now, many will regard marriage and the home in a rather poor way. And they would just look at, as we suggested earlier, social, religious, economic phenomenon or something of that nature, rather than what God has given us. But we can say that we have seen then that the home is a creation of God and must be regarded as such. We must regard it that way if we're going to be faithful to him. And then here's the significant thing, too, and that is your attitude toward this. Your attitude about the home and your part in fulfilling God's design for the home has a bearing on your salvation. We think back again of Ephesians 5 and look there and see how that was measured. And God used the home as an illustration, or the husband-wife relationship as an illustration, so that the Ephesians could understand the relationship of Christ and the church and how close Christ was to the church at Ephesus, how that meant so much to him. Thus they should think of it as what it would mean to them. And as we think of it now, it ought to be something that is so very precious and meaningful to us. God gave us the home for our happiness here on earth. You listen to some people and they think of it, and you listen to them talk, and you would think it was a means and a form of punishment. It's not. Not meant to be, but treating the home as God gave it to us, it is a wonderful place. Actually, the home as God gave it is as close to heaven as we're going to get while we are on earth. The home abused is going to be as close to hell as we'll get to while living on earth. God has given us something very precious, and I do hope that we will think of it in those terms, that it is the home is for us. We'll talk about that as we go. And then as we want to assist each other, of course, in the quest or the crown of righteousness, which Paul talked about and talked about in 2 Timothy 4. Here, as we recognize that there is a goal out there for all of us, certainly as believers in the Word, surely we do want to think in those terms, that there is out there for us something beyond this life. However good that it may be, whatever accomplishments we may have, it is, of course, not going to amount to much if we miss heaven. We want to realize that heaven is the ultimate goal for us all. That it needs to be that true goal that is not only then for just something idealistic, and people talk about the pie in the sky and other ridiculous things of that nature. It is that which can be ours for an eternity. And as Paul would say, and as we see it in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8, as he talks about this crown of righteousness. As far as our lessons are concerned in this series, I want each lesson to build upon the previous one. And so I just simply say, to be continued. We're going to continue the lesson. But let me read one other passage for you, just for the moment. And that is from the 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8. When Paul says, finally, remember that by this time he's the old man, writing to the young preacher. And so he says, finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. So just a simple question, and that would be, do you love his appearing? He's coming again. Are you ready? Do you want him to come? Will you welcome that coming? And if we have the right kind of home, it won't only be just husband, wife, and children. It'll be in the family of God. If you're subject to his invitation, we invite you to come. Always stand. Always stand.